Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem. Welcome back to today's Daf Yomi. Bechor Islamat Ches. We begin five lines from the top. The Snan or the Sanya Zuhedus Heid Chizkia. The following halacha was presented as testimony by Chizkia. His name was Chizkia Abi Ikesh. Perhaps his son's name was Ikesh. In any case, he presented as follows. Now, how did this get into our discussion? So, really, it relates to matters of Tumah V'Tahara, which is a totally different topic. But the Gemara yesterday concluded that we can solve the apparent difficulty with the halacha of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel regarding the size of the puncture of the missing part of the skull, which disables it from Tumas Oil. The question was exactly what size are we talking about. We had an issue with that, and we attempted to resolve it by coming up with some creative approach to understanding the shear. And the Gemara responded, yep, right on, and you should rely on it. Tzarech li talei saleha, four lines from the top of the Amid. You can rely on it with confidence. Kechizkia avi ikesh. So Rashi learns, he meant to say, good going. Kalaymar, yochol ata lismech al davar zeh. Good response, good answer, good solution. You can be confident in your solution. Just as Chizkia avi ikesh, says Rashi, shenismech al davar, who relied and was confident on his position, nobody challenged him. It was clear cut, and it was substantiated. But Tosis has a different pshat. He says what he was trying to tell him is that we have some difficulty in the understanding of the Mishnah, right? You have to work. Says Tosis, you have to really put in an effort to figure it out, to solve it. And don't just, tinker with the, modify the words and change the girsa. Just as we find that the next Gemara, where there was a halacha presented by Chizkia Avi Ikesh, presents this cryptic sounding formula, which the Gemara endeavors in great lengths to clarify and understand it. So you meant to put an effort to gain clarity. That was his point. Okay. So, what in fact did he tell us? The Sanya Zu Edus Heyud Chizkia V'Ikesh. He presented the following formula lifnei in front of Rabban Gamliel B'Yavna. As we know, the yeshiva, the Sanhedrin, was in Yavna after the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. That's where the center of Torah was, and that's where he came to present his formula. And he quoted the Zayde Sh'amar Mishum B'Gamliel Azakin. He quoted the elder Rabban Gamliel as follows: Kol she'en lo teich b'kli cheres en lo acharayim l'chalika. Now, initially, it's going to sound a bit cryptic, but later the Gemara will explain exactly what he had in mind. So, a klicheres is a kli made of clay. So, it has no toich, it has no interior, and it has no containment area, so like a flat tray. Eilai charayim l'chalika, we don't differentiate between the back, the charayim, the back of the exterior of the kli, versus the inside. Which basically means that we don't consider them two separate surface areas, and therefore the tumah just conducts right through. So if the tumah touched the inside, it travels to the outside. Touched the outside, travels into the inside. We don't differentiate. L'chaluk, we don't make a chaluk. And he explains, nitma toichet, the tumah arrived in the inside of the kli, nitma gaboy. The tumah extends over to the back as well. The tuma reached the back, it travels into the inside as well. Ask the Gemara, kli cheres? Well, you're talking about kli cheres. So if it has no toich, it could become tame? Of course not. Look in the Torah. Torah, when speaking about kli cheres, specifies that it has to have a toich, it has to have a containment area, it has to be a container. Kli cheres betoichai tol rachmona. Okay, Torah conditions that it must have a toich to become tame. Islay toich itamale. If it has a containment area, it can become tame, but otherwise not. Leslay toich lo itamale. So how can you teach otherwise? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Abin. You're right. Forget about klicheres. He He's speaking about kli shetef, a container made of other materials, metal, for instance. It's called shetef because it could be rinsed, it could be immersed in a mikvah to achieve tahara, to relieve itself of tumah, which a klicheres can't. It could only become tar if you break it. So that's why it's called kli shetef. So kli shetef is what he's talking about. Hachikam, he meant like this. Kol shein le'toich b'klicheres. So klicheres, which has no containment, we're just using that as a precedent, as a formula, as an equation, just like by klicheres, without a toich. Kenegdoi, correspondingly, if in fact it's a metal kli, b'kli shetef, ein le'chareim l'chalikav, it has no toich. So the backside is not different, is not treated separate, like a different zone than the inside. Meaning, in a minute the Gemara is going to ask, why can't he just speak directly about a Klei Shetev? Why start with a reference to Klei Cheres and make this equation? We'll get that in a minute. In any case, Ein L'Acharem L'Chalika, we don't differentiate between the back and the inside. In which case, Nitma Toich and Nitma Gabay. So Tuma arrived at the inside of the metal Klei, then the whole thing, including the back, becomes Tummy, but not in the reverse. So in this case, it goes both ways. The tumah is on the inside, the back is tameh. Nitma gabe, if tumah touched the outside, nitma toichai, the inside is also tameh, because it has no, two zones. It doesn't have a toich. So if it has a proper containment area, we differentiate between the inside and the outside. So the tumah reaches the inside, it spreads throughout the outside as well, but not vice versa. But if it's just a flat, tray which has no distinct containment area, we don't differentiate. The tumah conducts, both ways equally. Now for the obvious question, why hinge the metal kli with the klicheres? Nema, simply, you can state it outright. Speak directly about the metal kli. Kol she'en le'teich b'kli shetef. If it's a kli shetef, a metal kli without a distinct interior, just a flat tree, for instance, in acharem l'chaliku, don't differentiate between the top, which is the surface area, the functional area, versus the back. It's all one big happy family, and the tumah travels in both directions equally. Why? Reference to kli cheres. How come Ashmolam? He was trying to highlight this distinction. The yesh le'teich. Now that's a fact that by klicheres, the tumah can only affect it if it reaches the inside. By the way, by klicheres doesn't have to actually touch the material on the inside, even within the airspace. But in any case, it has to be within the containment area. So by the klicheres, the tumah only travels through the inside. Right? So the inside and then over to the outside. But a klicheres is not susceptible to tumah from behind, from the exterior, the halacha. So he's using that as a sort of a precedent to this concept that you can have a one-way tumah. Where do we find a one-way tumah of a kli cheres? Where even a tumah d'oraisa only travels one way. Tumah starts from the inside to the outside, but not vice versa. So he needs to use that as a point of reference and carry that element over to kli shetef, at least by tumah d'rabbanan. Let's see. No, Kamashma, he's trying to teach us like this. The Yesh L'Teich, if a metal kli has a distinct containment area, like a pot, then Hariyuk Kli Cheres is treated like a Kli Cheres. Kli Cheres, Ma Kli Cheres, Nitma Teich Nitma Gabi, just like a Kli Cheres in this instance, when it has a containment area. If the tumor reaches the inside, it's Metama, even the back, so it travels from inside out. But Loi Nitma Teich Nitma Gabi, but if there's no tumah on the inside, just on the outside, it's resistant to tumah on the outside. Af kli shetef. The same thing with the kli shetef. It follows a similar track. If it is a proper containment vessel, like a pot, it follows the same track. Nitma teicha nitma gabay. The tumah reaches the inside, then the whole thing, including the outside, becomes tameh. Lo nitma teicha nitma gabay. If the tumah does not reach the inside, rather it only touches the outside, it is resistant to tumah. Ask the Gemara, how could you say that? That one-way system is specific to kli cheres. We don't find that by metal kalim. Bishlam is certainly be kli cheres by a clay pot. Gali berachmana toichai to reveals that the tumah only travels from the inside out. Ella kli shetef, but a metal kli, mi gali berachmana toichai. What does the Torah speak about a containment area? You're right. Says the Gemara, ibutumah d'oraisa chinami. We're talking about a proper tumah, a real, lizard. Of course, There's a huge difference by Kli Cheres. Only the inside is susceptible to Tumah, not the outside. But by Kli Shatev, it doesn't really matter whether Tumah touched the inside or the outside. That's by Tumah D'Oraisa. Hoch by Ma'eskinon, in our Gemara, we're talking about a unique type of Tumah, the Tumah's Mashkin. So we're talking about the metal Kli touched liquid which became Tumah. Now liquid cannot be metame, a person or a kli. A person or a kli can only become tumah from an av hatumah, source of tumah, as opposed to liquid which imported its tumah from elsewhere, and it's only considered a rishon l'tumah, it's a downgraded level of tumah. It can't be metame a kli. But drabonah, it is metame a kli. And the reason is, Rashi explains, otu mashkin of zove zove, you see there are some liquids which are actually av hatumah, they're produced by a person who's a zava. Those liquids have a status of source, tumas, avatoma. They give them time of kli. So on account of those liquids, not to get things confused, Chacham applied the same ability or similar ability to any type of mashkin which becomes tummy, just on account of those avatomas. But since it's only tumah Rabbana wanted to highlight that it's a limited tumah. They didn't want you to treat it like a tumah deraisa, lest you come to burn truma that touched this kli, which isn't really justified, because only Tumah Rabbanan. So in order to highlight that it's only Tumah Rabbanan, they limited it to a certain extent. And they said, look, if it's a pot which has two zones, inside and outside, you know what? It's going to follow a similar parameter to a kli cheres. And yeah, if the mashka touches it on the inside, yeah, it becomes tameh. But only on the outside, it's resistant. That's only if it's a utensil, which is properly configured with an inside and an outside, so we have two distinctive zones, we can make this differentiation. But if it's just a flat tray, let's say, it doesn't have inside or outside, then there's no differentiation. So one big happy family. And it's susceptible to Tumah, Tumas Mashkin, Drabonin, whether on the functional side or the back side, doesn't. And that was Chizkiya V'Ikesh's lesson of the day. So again, Nachum Ma'eskinon, we're talking about Tumas Mashkin, Drabonin, that the Kli receive Tumah from a Tumas Mashkin, which only Drabonin. It's not as we have a Mishnah to this effect. Kli shenit machar v'mashkin. So we have a kli, let's say a metal kli, whose back touched mashkin, which are tummy. Being that it's only the rabbanon, we limit the tumah. Achor of tmein, the tumah stays on the outside. Atoicha, the inside, agnai, the ear, the handle, aznai, agnai zari is the base, even if it has a receiving area. Aznai, the round handles, like the ears of the other, the long handles, tar, they become, they stay tar, they're resistant because they're separate zones. That's because the tumah touched the outside. But nitma toichai, but if the mashkin reaches the inside of this kli, in that case, kuloi tumah spreads throughout the entire entity. So we make one point of distinction to highlight that tumah the rabbana, which is, A, that we're talking about a kli shetav, which has a containment area versus the exterior, and the tumas mashkin touched the outside, so the tumah is limited to the outside only. And the Gemara explains why. What's the basis for this distinction? The midaraisa, because the truth is minat Torah, ein oichel matamikli, vein mashkin matamikli, food or drink which can never really reach the level of avatumah. At most, they can only receive tumah from elsewhere. So inevitably, they're going to be a downgraded status, a rishon l'tumah, that can't be matami, a person or a kli. The Gemara specified. The Chacham were concerned that it might be confused with other liquids which are tummy to a very severe level, mashka zavazava. So they treated all mashka and tummy to a certain extent like avatumah, hilkach shavyur, avon ketumah de klecheres. And the reason why the Chacham treated this Tumas Mashkin sort of with leniency, similar to they gave it the same rules as a clay kli, despite being a metal kli, like, as we explained, in which case if the Tumah touches the back, only the back is, why? But they did not treat it like a Tumah Deraisa. Right, so he gave it a din of tumah kli cheres. Rashi says that if the tumah touches the back, the inside remains tahar. Kli cheres, actually the whole thing remains tahar, but in any case, it doesn't travel to the inside. So they gave it a similar status to tumah kli cheres, but They did not give it full-fledged tumah, as though it's a tumah deraisa, affecting a kli shetef. Why, if the tumah touched the outside, does it not travel to the inside like tumah deraisa of the rabban hakeru? Chacham established a point of distinction to highlight that it's only tumah derabbanon. What for? Kehechi, so that the loyalists of Alei Truma Bekashin not going to burn on account of this Tumah Truma Bekashin and touch this Kli. It's only Tumah Derabbanan. So again, his point was, just like we find by Kli Cheres, that we divide into two zones, likewise by Kli Shetef regarding Tumah Derabbanan, Tumas Mashkin, we divide into two zones. So if it's a Kli that has two zones, an inside and an outside, so the tumah touched the outside, it doesn't travel to the inside. But if it has no two zones, it's just a flat tray, even though it has the top side, which is the more functional side, and the back side, it doesn't matter. In this case, it says, even if it has no distinct content area, it's just a flat tray. Let's also make this distinction, this highlighting, that, depends where the tumah touched, at the back or the front. Well, there's no need to make additional distinctions. Since in a case of a container, a pot, we already made that established distinction. And everybody understands the topic at hand, that likewise, anytime Mashkin touches a Kli, only the Rabbanon, there's no need to make another distinction, meaning suffice to all that we made that distinction by the pot, differentiate between the inside and the outside. There's no need to make additional distinctions by like a tray, differentiate between the front and the back, in order to highlight that it's Tumah Derabbanan. We already understand it from the pot scenario. Okay, so by the pot, it's a rather clear-cut difference. We have the inside, we have the outside, but by a tray, it's not so visible, so there's no need to go all out and make additional, split hairs. Says the Gemara, we're talking about Tumah Derabbanan, affecting a tray which has no toich. Says the Gemara, why are we applying a Tumah Derabbanan to a tray? Even when a Torah tray is not going to become tummy, it needs to have a content area. Ve'en lo toich b'klei shetef d'oraisa b'kibul tumu a klei shetef, which has no distinct containment area. Even when a Torah is going to become tummy, even when it touches tumu d'oraisa, it's not tummy. Look, the pasuk compares other materials to a sack. A sack has containment abilities. Yumid d'sak b'inon. The other materials have to be similar to a sack, which is mentioned in that pasuk. What signifies a sack? Mas sack metaltel molivarekin. A sack is meant to be transported full or empty, meaning it has containment abilities. Af kol metaltel molivarekin. Likewise, other materials must have containment abilities to be susceptible to tumah. So why would a metal tray become tummy at all? Well, says the Gemara, bahanach dechazel medrasois. Talking about a flat, metal utensils which can be used for sitting, medras, for a zava. So it's a totally different, it works a totally different system. Tumas medras does not need content. Even a bench could be used for a medras. So since it has that function, it could become tummy. Says the Moyachi Cheres Nami. So why by Kli Cheres? Do we, not apply tumah when it has no containment ability? Rashi says, we should have a gzeirah derabbanan. If mashkin touches it, a kli cheres should become tummy, because at times a kli cheres can become tummy even without a toich, even without a toich, if it's fit for sitting. So the Gemara, no. Ein medras be kli cheres. Kli cheres cannot become medras. Why? So you would think it's like one of those halachis and taharis which aren't necessarily understood to us. Rashi gives a very practical reason. He says, sheyishaver, it's going to break. Clay breaks, not meant for sitting. Interesting that the Gilgul Nashas, Rav Kivegar, refers to a different Rashi elsewhere. I believe he says that it's based on halacha. But here he gives a very simple practical approach. It's not meant for a city. Okay, so in conclusion, Chizkiyavi Ikesh Torah is interesting. Halacha. So, Minat Torah, if it's a Tumadei Raisa, by Kalei Cheres, it needs to have Toich. And in fact, the Tumah can only travel through the Toich. Tumah reaches the inside, then the Kli becomes Tameh. But the outside is resistant to Tumah. Conversely, by Kalei Shetef, the Tumah can go both ways. Minat Torah. However, if it's Tumah Derabbanan, we sort of limit it. In a case where the Kli has a proper Toich, so in that case, we say if the Mashkan touches the inside, yeah, the entire thing is Tami, but if it touches it from the outside, it stays there, it does not travel inside. Continues the Gemara. Rav Papa Amar Magdeh Agadol Sheninu. So this is a throwback to yesterday, basically. Just backtrack a second to gain clarity. So we had a Machlekes B'Shamim B'Silal. The Gilgoylus, the skull, is Matame anything under the same roof, provided it's a full skull. Well, let's say it's missing. It loses that ability. It loses that Tumas oil. How much missing? B'Shamim say Magdeyach. The hole is the size of a drill bit. A standard size. B'Silal, it's only Matame if the person could have survived with this skull, but otherwise there's too much missing, it loses the Tumah. The question was, the Gemara related that the Yashir of survival is a Sela, which in the next Mishnah we see corresponds to the Magdeach, to the drill. So if survival is Sela and Sela is drill, so Misham and Misila is the same thing. Drill and survival is the same thing, both Sela. That was the question. We had one answer yesterday. Magdeach means a little bit of a roomy Magdeach with a little wiggle space. Here comes another text. Rapapam Magdeach Godol Sheninu. The Brisa equated Magdeach to Sela. If you look at the wording of the Mishnah in the bottom of Lamed Zayin Beis, it says Magdeach Godol Shalishka, the large, extra size drill of the Lishka. That matches a Sela. Magdeach Godol Sheninu. But the plain Magdeach, the plain drill size that Beishama we're talking about, is smaller than a Sela. Miklal, apparently, the Magdeach Stam, just a plain Magdeach, such a Namim Kasela, smaller than a Sela. So Beishama is talking about a smaller shear. Even if it's missing a little bit, it's already tahar. So in fact, they're being lenient. And they still require more missing to lose the Tumah, which is up to a Sela. Harichlo Rameir. Okay, that's going to Rameir, as we'll see in a minute. The Magdeach is small. El Rabban, like Lamim, called Rabban, who disagree, then we're stuck again. This is now we find in Mishnah, where, Rameir says that the Magdeach that Beishami are talking about is the small drill. It's not Beis Magdeach Amru, which Magdeach and Beishami are talking about, but Kadon Shal Rebbe, the small drill of the doctors, the very Rameir. So Beishami are talking about a smaller hole than Beis Hillel. V'chacham oim megadol shalishka. Kon chachamim, supersized drill like the lishka. So, kon chacham, certainly you can't offer the solution. And even according to our mayor, Beishami talking about a smaller hole. As soon as it gets that, it already loses tumah. So they're being more lenient than Beis Hillel, which is unlikely. Typically, Beishami are more strict. Even that, how's that going to work? Havale mekule Beishami. In which case, you have another example where Beishami is being lenient, Umeichumer Beisila being strict. And interestingly, we have a list in Meseches Edya. It's giving us a very limited listing. I believe it's about 6 examples where they sort of switched roles. Beishami were lenient, Beisila were machmer, and this is not included on that list. Vanan, and we, the Snan, the 6 that are listed, it's not are listed. But that's it, Leitnan, Leitnan. Item that's not there is not there, it doesn't belong there. Okay, so we're stuck again. Here comes yet another proposal to solve this issue. Amar Rav Nachman, Selan and Reina Shinin, Kamek Deach Gadol. True, the Mishnah there says that the large drill compares to the Sela of Nirainas, of Niran Kesa. big drill, a big sela. But sela stam, a regular sela, which Beisilul are talking about, zrutra magdeach stam, is small, and even smaller than the standard typical drill hole. In which case, Beisilul are referring to a smaller hole than Meshamai. And as soon as it's missing that little bit, it's already tar. So they're being lenient. Now, it's all worked out. Okay, so Beshamai talking about a standard drill. You need that much to be missing. Beisilul, even a smaller amount, is already tar. So we resolved our difficulty. Continues the Mishnah with more examples of movement of blemishes found on the Bechor, which will allow it to be shechted anywhere. Haris shel ayin, the eyelid. Shenikav, it's got a hole. Shenifkam, it's a chip missing a little bit. Shenistak, split. That is a mum as per Charutz. Charutz talked about in the Torah. Hari bein a dak. Suppose the eye developed this dak, this membrane covering it. Tevalu. It's mixed up. The white and the black are mixed up. Chilozoin, nachash, enav. Some sort of skin growth. Looks like chilozoin, like a snail. Nachash, a snake. Enav, a little berry. These are all listed in the Torah, where it says dak, tevalul, all these are qualifying moment. Ezel tevalul, how do we define the tevalul? So we have the white surrounding the black, the retina area. So which way is the strip going? Ezel tevalul, lovan apaisek basira, nechnas b'shach. We're speaking that there's a strip going from the white through the encasement of the black and into the black. That is considered tevalul. But in the reverse, no issue. Shachar, nichnas v'lovan ein mum. But if it's going from the black to the white, that's not a mum, because the white is not, you know, the delicate, fragile part of the eye. Mum does not affect the white, as we're going to see in the Gemara. We turn to the base. My haris, Mishnah referred to the wrist. What is that? My papa tura bara, the outer row, outer layer, the end of the eye, meaning the eyelid. Dak tevalu. Tana rabbana. Dak mishuka. So this sinking membrane, it appears like it's sunken in. Here is a mum. That's a mum itself. But if it appears floating, then any mum is not an issue. Rashi learns that it makes the whole eye look sunk. Okay. Says the Tani Ifcha, we have a brisa which goes the other way around. That sunken is not an issue, and floating is an issue. Like Rashi, Hab B'Shachar B'Lavan. The answer is depends where, on the black or on the white. Ask the Gemara, what do you mean? V'Mumim B'Lavan. The white is never affected by Mumim. Ella, rather, we're talking about the color of the actual membrane. Habduk lovin, habduk shachar. Depends on the color of the membrane. Why? How? The Amar, Rabba, Barachan. He told us, Sachli, who told me, Rabbi Yesha, the Menusha. Dak shachar mishuka is a mum. A black membrane which appears sunken, that's a problem. Safeni mum, if it appears floating, it's not an issue. By the white, it's just the other way around. Dak love and mishuka, it's a white membrane, looks inverted, in a mum, it's not an issue. Floating is an issue, sofer is a mum. It's a manech, a good way to remember, is a barka. Barka is something with sheen, shining, white and shining. So if it's white plus, it looks elevated, that's an issue. Chilazo and nachash v'etzer. Yiboilu. What did the Mishnah mean? It's all one and the same. Chilazo and hu nachash. Chilazo and nachash is one and the same type of condition. A snail, you know, snake-like growth. Or dilmo, perhaps it's two different conditions. Chilazo and nachash. Toshmai comes a raya that it's all one and the same thing. Dama Rabba Barbachan, Sochli Rabbi Yechonman Elazar. Rabbi Yechonman Elazar told me a story. There was an older scholar who was a kohen who lived in our neighborhood. Zaken Echad Hayibishchon Asenu. What was his name? Rabbi Shemayin. Ben Yosef Lakunya. That was his name, Shemayin. Umayama Levat Lefana. I never passed across him because he was a great man, out of respect, never walked in front of him. Except for one time. Pamachas Levat Lefana. One time I passed him by. Amrali, turn to me, Shay bin Shay, my son, come, have a seat. Let's have a talk. Chiloz and Zemum. And he showed me a Bechor that he had on hand. He says, look, that growth, that Chilozin, qualifies as a Mum. Zemum Kabua. It's a permanent qualifying Mum, Lishchot, all of the Shechta Bechor. And in fact, Vizeu Nochash Am Chacham. This is one and the same as the Nochash condition mentioned in the Gemara, mentioned in the Mishnayos. Okay? Now, the obvious question is, how could this great scholar, as great as he was, rule and certify his own Bukhar. Although we already learned, Ein Adam Roye Mumin L'Asher, a person is not authorized to certify his own woman for concern of, you know, negius and lack of objectivity. But in this case, he can do it. Aval Moira Halacha Tamidim, but he can teach the Halacha to his students, teach them the Halachas, and have them rule according to their understanding. But Talmidim Moidim Way, that's what happened here. He sat him down, he taught him, and then the Talmud responded in kind, asked the Gemara, but in any case, how do we trust a Chacham who produces a halacha in response to a circumstance? Perhaps he's just, you know, presenting it as per need. Va'amar Rabbi Avuna, called Talmud Chacham, Shemoyra Halacha Uba. But Talmud Chacham comes along and teaches us a brand new halacha, first time. Can we accept it? Well, it depends. If it relates to an incident, no. In Kaidamasa, if he relates it before it came into actualization, so it's just, you know, an objective halacha. In Kaidamasa, Amr Shamil, we accept it. If he loved it otherwise, if it's a response to a circumstance, perhaps he's tailoring it as per need. In Shamil, we can't accept it. It's here as well. How could we accept the halacha that this is a mum? Says the Gemara, it's old news. This wasn't the first time he taught it. Iwanami. He too, Moiro Bohavamikar, he was teaching it all along. It was old news. It's just that now that it was pertinent, he taught it to this Talmud to certify the mum. Ezel Tavalo, what defines a Tavalo? Love and a Pesach Asira, the white traveling into the black of the eye. Masis and Manu Rabbi Yesi, it's called like Rabbi Yesi, the Sanya. Love and Nichols B'Shachar. So, what the mayor, both ways is an issue, white into black, or Shachar Nichols B'Lovin. Black into white, there is a mum, qualifies as a mum to be Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yisimer, no, only into the black. Lava nechas b'shachar, so the white traveling into the black, there is a mum, but not in the reverse. Shachar nechas b'lovin, ain't a mum. Why? She'ain mumin. Mumin do not affect b'lovin in the white. Amarav, why? My time to Rabbi Yisi, the white is unaffected by mum, dechsiv. Yotza mechil v'neimu, the wicked have strayed due to the fatty eyes, their indulgence. The Torah refers to the white as fat. Tarba, the fat, the ain of the eye, ikri, it's called. A name of the stomach, the ikri, it's not referred to the eye per se. It's not the primary element of the eye. It's unaffected by these conditions. Rameir, who disagrees, he says that even the eye can be affected by taima. He says, look at the pasuk, malosh and tavalo. What does tavalo mean? Any mix-up in either direction. Dover and babel, sainai. Here come additional conditions, which are considered mum. Chavarvar, Rashi learns, Choylihu sheyesh tipin levanus ba'ayin, some call it flex, it has these like droplets in the eye, some sort of, you know, particles. V'amay makvuin, the animal is constantly tearing from his eyes. Ezeo chavarvar kavo, what's considered a permanent chavarvar condition, kol sheshel shmonim yayim, it was present for 80 days, but if it just comes and goes, it doesn't qualify. Rabbi Chanim Antignus Oimer, Boidkin Oisoi, Gimel Pa'amim, B'Toyich Shemayim Yayim. So, Rashi says, it's not enough to check, you know, on day 1 and day 80. Maybe it came and went. You have to check at even intervals within the 80 days, 26 and a half days per examination. About. So that is considered a proper inspection regimen. So interesting, Machlokes, Rashi says you have to, Rashi seems to say you have to check three times within the 80, aside from the first time. And Tesis learns that once in the beginning, once in the middle, one in the end. Okay, in any case, you have to confirm that it was there for the entire 80 days. Ve'elon mayim akvuim. Now, how do we determine that the tearing at the water is also a permanent condition? You have to actually give him a test. Feed him certain feeds and see if the problem still persists. And that confirms that it's considered permanent. So he has to eat his animal feed in a certain sequence, certain type of material. Ochalach v'yavishal gesham. So he ate, you know, moist animal feed and dry animal feed. The Gemara later will tell us the moist grows at the end of the winter the dry is picked at the end of the summer. Shel Geshamim, coming from a field which suffices with rainwater. That's considered a proper test. If he eats that and he's still tearing, then he's in trouble. But Lach V'Yavashal Shalachim, if it's moist and wet of the Shalachim, a field which is hand-watered, not the best quality field. Or he started with the dry and then over to the moist, that's not a proper indication. Provided that eaten in sequence, lach and then yavish. We'll explain exactly how this works. Now, masnisen mani, whose opinion is reflected in our Mishnah? That chavarvar hakabua is only if the flax were there for 80 days. That's Rabbi Yudi, the Sani we find in the Braisa. That's an 80-day experience. Chavar var kavua, 40 yom, umay makfuim, 80 yom. Rabbi Meir says the water is 80, an 80-day experience, but the chavar var needs to last 40 days to be qualifying. Rabbi Yudi Omer, no, chavar var is also an 80-day experience to qualify, 80 yom. Veil in my makfuim. So, according to Rabbi Yehuda, again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Chavarvar is an 80-day experience, but Mayim HaKfuim is tested differently. It's not necessarily day-related. Rather, if it persists throughout this, animal feed testing experience. Rabbi Yehuda, Chavarvar is Shemayim Yayim, but Ve'elohin Mayim HaKfuim, what qualifies as Mayim HaKfuim? Ochalach V'yavish Shel. All kinds of gerses here. He ate the moist and the dry feed shell. Beis habal. So again, that's a naturally irrigated field by rainwater. V'loy lach v'yavish. I'm looking at the bach. V'loy lach v'yavish beis hashlochan, as opposed to from a hand irrigated field. That doesn't work. Oishi achal yavish, or if he did dry b'achak and then achal lach, it doesn't work. Unless he follows a very specific regiment, so number one, it's from a proper field, naturally, irrigated field, and done in the proper sequence. Yavish after the lach, so first lach and then yavish. He has to undergo a 3-month test. But if you look back on the Mishnah, it would seem that both of these don't work. Whether it's a naturally irrigated or hand irrigated, either way, it doesn't seem to work based on the Mishnah. No, we have to re-understand the Mishnah. The Mishnah is though it's missing some words. And you read it like this. There is a mum. So it was fed the proper material, lach and then yavish, from a naturally irrigated field. That's the proper test. And if the tearing persists, there is a mum, it's a confirmed mum. But otherwise, if it comes from Beis HaShalach, which is a manually watered field, that doesn't qualify, ain't a mum. And again, it has to be in the proper sequence. The Kshamim Nami, even if it's from a proper field, it has to be moist and then dry. Ochel Yavish, and then Mechaka HaHalach, that's not the proper test, ain't a mum. Achayach, unless he eats Yavish after Achahalach. So bottom line, it has to come from a proper field, moist and then dry. And it lasts for 3 months. This test, right? Is that true? That it's only 3 months? Vatanya. We have a braisa. When do you find the moist? When is the dry? Different seasons. Adar v'nisan lach. So the lach grows adar v'nisan, end of the winter. And elevatishra, you have the yavish. Sounds like it's a 4-month plant. Ema. Let's fix it. Adar v'chatzi nisan lach, elo v'chatzi tishri yavish. So it's a month and a half at a time. Now the question is you have to actually do the month and a half adar v'chatzi nisan and then wait till the end of the summer to do the other part of the test? Iboilu, lach b'zman lach. So the moist is fed to him during the end of the winter. V'yavish and the dry b'zman yavish at the end of the summer. So is it seasonal? Idilma, or it's just about the material, but it can be fed all at once. Idilma lach v'yavish b'zman alach. Could even be, during winter time, and he's being fed winter and summer feed, and winter and summer feed to conduct the test. Tashma, here comes a riot. Damar idibaravn, omar bitzabarashin. Adav v'nisan lach, elav tishri yavish. So it sounds like you have to wait and do it in the proper season. This part you do at the end of the winter, this part of the test, end of the summer. No, perhaps it's speaking about the type of feed. But do whatever you want. Then with period Elul v'Tishrei Machilin, like perhaps you're just referring to the product of Elul v'Tishrei, the dry and the wet, that he has to be fed. But Machilin Ba'ada v'Nisan, you can feed it to him at the end of the summer, end of the winter. Okay, so we're not sure about that. Okay, so we speak about what to feed him, when to feed him, but how much? How much do we feed this animal for this test? Not very much. The amount of a dried fig. Okay, how do we feed it to him? What part of the day? Empty stomach, full stomach? Question. So is this the first meal of the day? Or perhaps it accompanies every meal. If it's the first meal, empty stomach or full stomach? Could machil before breakfast or lachachil after breakfast? Now, could machil b'adam alle, if it's on an empty stomach before he has his breakfast, certainly it's going to be effective on an empty stomach. Because some are like medicine. Some are effective, before an empty stomach. So that certainly works. But lachachil amai, what about on a full stomach? Next question. Before he drinks or after he drinks? Now, before he drinks, certainly it's going to be effective. Go straight to the, But kisari, barley is effective. Basically, it certainly works. What about after drinking? Next question. Kosher. Is the animal sort of contained? Or is just, free riding? Unleashed. Mutar vadim ali. Certainly, if he's free to roam, he's in a good frame of mind. Certainly, the test will be very effective, and is it a good indication of his condition because he's in a good frame of mind, nothing holding him back, right? But kosher might, let's say if he's held in and constricted, is that a fair test? Next question, levado im chaveri, is he eating alone or with the whole chavra? Im chaveri vadim ali, if he's with the other animals, certainly it's a proper, fair test because a good frame of mind, a good situation. Labade mai, what if he's alone? Is that a fair test? Bir basad, are we talking in town or out in the field? Basad, vade mai, if he's out in the open, free to roam, of course, it's good. Bir mai, what about in town? Bir avashi. Imtim salema basad, if you'll tell me it has to be out in the open, the field, what about a garden, which is sort of not really urban, but it's not really the field? Ginas mukhalir, if it's a garden next to the city. My, does it qualify? Take it, we leave it unresolved. One more piece. Rabbi Chanin Matinus Oimer. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. So he learns that you have to check him, right? Three times within the 80 days. We're talking about the particles in the eye, right? Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, B'vat Shiyum Shaloshim. The three tests have to be evenly spaced in the 80 days. Now comes the Shaila. Boy Menei Pinchos, who is the brother Achva de Mashmo. He asked his brother Mishmo, have a Shaila. So you have this tearing eyes and you give him all this stuff to eat and he doesn't recover, which confirms that it's a permanent condition. Question: this condition is considered permanent going forward or retroactive to when he started tearing? Is that confirmed that the mum was there retroactively from day one? It's just sort of a test to indicate what was there? Or perhaps it's only considered permanent going forward after he resisted all these treatments. What's the difference? Either way, at this point, it's a mum, and until this point, you had to hold back on account of maybe not, right? So what's the point of asking this question? The answer is, suppose a fellow did make pidyon on day 20. He redeemed it. And then a person used that money, misused that money, diverted for personal use. So now, if it turns out that he was always a balmum, in which case that redemption was valid, in which case that money became kaddish, and one who diverts that money for personal use committed me'ila, moil. However, if the mum condition was only established going forward from the 80 onward, not retroactive, so that pidyon was invalid, and that money was not kaddish, loy moil. So there's no me'ila on that money. Moil. Which way would you go? So upon hearing this question from his brother, who, as Rashi explained, wasn't known to be the sharpest, individual, he was taken aback. He says, wow, such a sharp question from you, that's a real stumper. Kari Shmuel Le Shmuel applied to him the pasuk. Pischem, it's like crippled people. Bazazu went ahead and bazazu baz. They looted the loot, and which is not very feasible for a crippled person to do. How did you come up with such a good question? And you really stumped me. So in effect, it was a compliment. Okay, bottom line, we spoke about the Kli Cheres, which only mitami mitoichai, Kli Shetev mitami either way, minat Torah, but midrabban, if it has a toich, the tumah can only travel from inside out. We spoke about all kelim becoming tami b'medras, but not Kli Cheres, and we resolved the question of the size of the bit of the Magdeach, b'shamim yisilal, regarding the tumah of the Golgoilus. We added some more movement to our list, damaged eyelids, cataract in the eye, kinds of growths. We spoke about the flex in the eye, tearing eyes, how to determine, and in fact these are considered permanent blemishes. Okay, all the best to you, and much hatzlacha.